Syria is struggling to respond to the earthquake's disaster, but how much of that is down to politics? The regime in Damascus insists that it should control aid and rescue efforts, but as it's under international sanctions and boycotts, won't that hamper aid reaching devastated areas? This is Inside Story. Hello, welcome to the programme. I'm Adrian Finnegan. They are the worst earthquakes to hit Turkey and Syria in decades. Scenes of devastation have emerged on both sides of the border. With thousands of people dead, rescue teams are working around the clock to find survivors. Humanitarian assistance is essential, particularly in northern Syria. But are politics hindering the response? Al Jazeera's Katia Lopez-Horayan reports.
Years of conflict and now earthquakes. The challenge of delivering aid to northern Syria is now even tougher.
In a way, we had grown accustomed to war, but this earthquake happened all of a sudden. We were very, very scared. We got frightened with years of conflict, but this was different, just horrific.
Much of this region includes rebel-held areas badly affected by years of conflict. And separating politics from international aid is difficult.
It would be quite ironic, if not even counterproductive, for us to reach out to a government that has brutalized its people over the course of a dozen years now. Instead, we have humanitarian partners on the ground who can provide the type of assistance in the aftermath of these tragic earthquakes.
Resources are limited, and routes used by the United Nations to transport aid from Turkey to Syria have been disrupted.
And the situation here is being handled by the government. As we know, the government's capacity is very limited in terms of rescue teams, in terms of equipment. Still many people are under the rubble, and the government has very little capacity.
Humanitarian groups are calling for U.S. sanctions to be temporarily lifted to ease the delivery of aid and encourage countries to help, a message echoed by Syria's government.
So even those countries who want to send humanitarian assistance, they cannot use the airplane cargo because of the sanctions.
Syrian President Bashar al-Assad has been accused of withholding aid and services from rebel-held areas to punish the opposition. But with a major response needed to cope with such a widespread disaster, humanitarian groups are calling for politics to be set aside, both at home and abroad. Katia Lopez-Odoyan for Inside Story.
Let's bring in our guests for today's discussion. From Ankara, we're joined by Ahmet Kesa, who's Associate Professor at Hasan Kalyanoglu University. From Brussels, we have Asad Al-Aichi, who is Executive Director of Beitna Syria. That's a non-governmental organisation that provides grants for development projects in Syria. And from Norman, Oklahoma, Joshua Landis, Director of the Centre for Middle East Studies at the University of Oklahoma. Gentlemen, welcome to you all. Ahmet, let's start with you. Syria then, as we heard, says that it should control the delivery of aid into all of Syria. It doesn't recognize the non-governmental organizations working in the north and northwest. Is Syria playing politics with aid?
To be honest, when we are talking about Syria, you know, at least the country is already divided into three sections, and different powers are controlling each section. In the northeastern part, we have the PKK, PID, YPG, a Kurdish influence area. And at the center, Damascus, through Aleppo and the Mediterranean area, we have the regime forces. And on the northwestern part, under the Turkish influence, we have the opposition forces, the Syrian Salvation Government. So in each area, they have different difficulties after the earthquake, but the most affected areas are especially under the regime control and under the Salvation Syrian Salvation Government control, because the losses concentrate in those two regions. For example, under the northwestern part, under Salvation Government, I think the death toll of the people reached to more than 1,280, and under regime control is 1,250. So different administrations, different political powers make the situation a little bit more difficult. But this chaotic environment may give pave to new political advances in the region for the unitary structure of the Syrian, maybe for the future. We will see. But the situation is chaotic, and the first thing to be conducted by the international community and the United Nations should be to focus on the humanitarian aid in all the regions with NGOs and international organizations, all of them,
I'm sorry to interrupt you. How can the UN do that if Syria's government, though, insists that all of the aid delivered to Syria has to go through it?
For the regime part, there might be some difficulties, but I think for the opposition part, it will not be a problem, because already there are international organizations working in that regions. So I think the negotiations should be given they should be concentrated on coming together and finding solutions, because today is not the day for political power clashes. Today, the humans are really need the basic needs, shelter because of the winter conditions, the humanitarian food, water, every kind of thing. And that should be the first thing that the whole world should concentrate on, not the political clashes at the moment.
Assad, does the Syrian government, still a pariah in much of the international community and under US and EU sanctions, does it have any role to play in the distribution of aid to rebel-held areas of the country? If it accepts offers of assistance, what measures could or perhaps should be put into place to ensure that aid reaches its intended recipients?
Well, if I may, thank you for having me. If I may start very quickly by saying that no matter what the Syrian government says, the UN has a mandate to deliver humanitarian aid to the northwest of Syria, as the cross-border resolution was just renewed in January, and has a mandate to do that until the end of June. So there is a clear mandate for the UN to be able to do that. The Syrian government can say whatever it wants. Now, what we really need, though, at the moment, is not only equipment and material, but it's actually international rescue teams. And I here want to salute the Egyptians, who have already sent the first international rescue team into Genderis in the areas under control of the opposition. But international rescue teams are needed in all affected areas. For that, there might be a need to coordinate with the Syrian government. But I think the main actor there would be the Syrian Arab Red Crescent, and they should be the interlocutor of the international community, not the Syrian government in Damascus. And through SAARC, I think international rescue teams can make their way into Jebli and Aleppo City, which are the most two affected areas in Syrian government control. Now, the challenge, as the professor has mentioned, is for areas under control of the Salvation Government. So to go a bit into the particularities of the northwest of Syria, it's not really one area, it's two areas. Greater Idlib, that is under control of the Salvation Government, which is an HDS-sponsored government, and the areas under direct Turkish control, which are controlled by the Syrian interim government that is affiliated to the opposition. So for areas under direct control of the Turkish government, aid is not really a problem, as we do not have to deal with terrorist organizations. For Idlib, that is a challenge. We need immediate solutions for that, because two of the largest hit cities in the northwest of Syria are in the Idlib province, mainly Harim and Sil'in. Those are the two most affected cities in the greater Idlib province. They can easily be accessed through the Bab al-Hawa crossing. Bab al-Hawa crossing is the authorized crossing by the UN mechanism. So everything is in place for an international response. Now it remains to be seen how we can allow for international rescue teams to go in and for equipment to be delivered. But the last small logistical challenge remains is making sure that the road is in good shape to be able to do the delivery.
That crossing remains closed, doesn't it, due to the damage to the infrastructure?
No, the crossing is open.
Okay, good.
The crossing is open. The crossing is open. There are small logistical challenges on the road from the Gaziantep hub to the border crossing because of the destruction around Reyhanlı, which is a bit to the north of the border crossing. It should be fully functional by the end of the day. And the Turkish government has made Bab Salama and Arra'i border crossings as alternatives for entry of humanitarian aid. So at the moment, we have three border crossings that are open. One is half operational, which is Bab al-Hawa, which is the main UN authorized border crossing. But there are two alternative border crossings that are fully functional, easily accessible, and these are Bab Salama and Arra'i border crossings.
Joshua Landis, 90% of people in northern Syria were already dependent upon humanitarian aid before this earthquake. A natural disaster on this scale could not have hit a more vulnerable population. It's difficult at the moment. For a while, not a single route was open for aid, but as Assad has just told us, at least now that one crossing is open. Time is of the essence. People are dying. What should be done and by whom, as our fellow humans suffer? Surely now is the time to put politics aside, isn't it?
It is a time to put politics aside, and this may offer a chance for some kind of boost and change of policy. You asked in the beginning of your thing about whether people are playing politics with this, and of course they are. You know, every one of these three areas that are controlled by different governments and different regimes are playing politics with food. The United States has put very severe sanctions on Syria. It's impossible to send money in to loved ones through banks. All of the banking codes, SWIFT codes, have been blocked. The United States controls all of Syria's oil and is trying to make sure that no oil gets to Syria. That means that machines can't run. And Assad is doing the same thing with the rebel-controlled areas. He wants to control what food gets to the rebels. And it's the same with the rebels and the aid coming into the rebel area. So it's time for politics to be put aside. And I think that the international community needs to rush aid in to all three of these enclaves, particularly the northwest, the rebel-controlled area, and the Syrian area, because Latakia, Aleppo, Hama regions have been devastated. My own in-laws who live in Latakia area, numerous buildings around theirs have collapsed. And that's true for towns throughout the region. So they need aid desperately.
Joshua, the U.S. has ruled out delivering aid via the Syrian government. As we heard at the beginning of the program, U.S. State Department spokesman Ned Price said it would be ironic, if not even counterproductive, for us to reach out to a government that has brutalized its people over the course of a dozen years now. I mean, is that the right attitude, given the situation? How will the U.S. get aid? Okay, well, how will the U.S. get aid to people who need it?
The U.S. is not going to get aid into this area. You know, they're going to get aid into the northeast and the northwest, and that's fine. The point is that the international community, America, can sit aside on this. But the Arab governments, we've seen Egypt reach out, Sisi's reached out to the Syrian government. The Syrian government is going to be involved in this one way or the other. And through the Red Cross is working within the Syrian part, the Syrian government-controlled part. So is the Red Crescent. Those are two excellent agencies that can deliver aid. And you know, if the United States can deliver aid to those agencies, then they don't have to go through the government directly. Of course, the government's involved in delivering trucks and delivering aid, and the military is going and digging people out. The Syrian government is trying to respond to this. Of course, the spotlight is on the government. Can it be effective? And Syrians are in despair because their government has been so ineffective. The national budget of Syria this year is about $3 billion, which is, you know, the reconstruction of Syria needs tens of billions of dollars. The government is not in any shape, way or shape, of capable of carrying out the aid that needs to be taken, that needs to be delivered in this area.
We'll come back to this point in a few minutes, Joshua. Ahmet, Turkey also, of course, badly affected by this earthquake. It's understandably focused on its own citizens right now. But to what extent does it hold the key to access to northern Syria, even though the roads on both sides of the border at the moment are very badly damaged?
Actually, today we have, let's say, very, very close connection with the temporary administration system in the northwestern sites under the Turkish influence. So they are very, let's say, connected to the Turkish administration system, and they are working in cooperation with them. But just to give an idea for our audience, the worst case scenario in the earthquakes happened in the region. Only in Turkey, 10 provinces were affected, and the area is about bigger than 100,000 square kilometers. So it's bigger than the whole area of Iceland or Portuguese or Hungary. So like a whole country. So that's why in first day, it was very difficult to fix all the roads and other things. But today, most of them are working. And the roads will be connected and opened. As already mentioned by our friend from Brussels, the gates are working, and the third one will be operational, I think, till the end of today. So the aid system will properly work also. But in some regions, we have seen, for example, in Öncepinar, that PKK is also ignoring this extraordinary situation and attack to the border pass by multi-launched rocket systems. So the terrorist organizations are using also these bad conditions as an opportunity for their attacks. So these should be prevented as well and taken under control, of course, because the security forces are already concentrated on the rescue efforts. So this is difficult, but it's working. But so the international community can concentrate on humanitarian aid, and it can work.
I'm sorry to interrupt. You say that these areas should be taken under control. By whom?
Of course, the security forces in the region. But when the international rescue teams reach to the area, the actual security forces can return to their actual works, and they can concentrate on the security as well, because now the military and other security forces are concentrated on research and rescue. So the terrorist organizations are using this as an opportunity to threaten the current security situation also, to deteriorate it. So that's why I think more research and rescue teams and other humanitarian aid materials should reach to the point, and security forces then should remain the security and maintain their security as well.
Ahmet, you say that the various groups are taking advantage of the situation for their own ends. To what extent will the Syrian government try to do the same and take advantage of this situation for its own ends?
For sure, that all the political parties may try to use it, but it is not very easy as well, because they already themselves have huge problems in their own area as well. So I don't think that they will try to use this as an opportunity to attack Idlib region and other places. But of course, that's a kind of alternative or risk which should be mitigated, or some precautions should be taken. And international community should focus on, should not ignore as well.
Assad, what effect were the international sanctions on Syria having people in the northwest of the country before the disaster?
So international sanctions have no impact on emergency response and humanitarian aid.
Yeah, but as there are
wide-reaching, far-reaching exemptions.
As we said, 90% of people in northern Syria were already dependent upon humanitarian aid before the earthquake. So the sanctions must have been having some impact upon them.
I was getting to that. Sanctions have direct impact, as Professor Landis said, on remittances, on financial transfers into the country because of the debanking of Syria and the fact that we are only left to use the Hawala system, which is not scalable and very difficult and convoluted to use. So the big impact is on remittances, is on the ability of peer-to-peer financial distributions, etc. So what financial international sanctions are doing are basically they're increasing the cost of the humanitarian response. However, they're not preventing it. And I absolutely agree with what Professor Hernandez said, that the Syrian government is absolutely inefficient, but not only inefficient, I would say also extremely corrupt and criminal. And the way they're approaching all disasters that have affected Syria, and also how they're approaching this disaster of the earthquake. So therefore, we need international rescue teams. We cannot leave this to the hands of the different de facto authorities on the ground. We absolutely need an international coordination mechanism and international rescue teams to be on the ground in all areas of Syria.
I wanted to ask you who will coordinate the response. To what extent will the reluctance of international actors to deal with Syria's government and support non-governmental organizations directly lead to a botched response?
Therefore, we need to create a coordination mechanism. How to do that? There are different ways.
At one point,
it was the UN. It was OCHA that was doing that coordination. But unfortunately, as I mentioned, the Gaziantep hub has been completely hit, and therefore we cannot rely on the OCHA hub in Gaziantep to be able to coordinate the aid for the northwest of the country. Now, Syria has appealed to the civic protection mechanism within the EU. Turkey has appealed to the same protection mechanism. So the ECHO, DG ECHO, can lead this if there is a political will within the European Union to basically lead the coordination effort and the entry of international rescue teams. ECHO has already people on the ground in Damascus, and therefore they can take the lead on that, and they're trustworthy from the different political powers in the different areas of Syria. Otherwise, it can be left to a coordination mechanism among Syrian NGOs in a different part of Syria. That has happened before when there were forced displacements from Eastern Ghouta into Idlib, for example. There was a coordination mechanism that was created for shelter to accept people, reception centers, etc. So there is previous precedence where there has been coordination mechanisms that worked between the Syrian Arab Red Crescent from one side in government-controlled areas and other NGOs operating in the northwest of the country.
Joshua, for years, the international community has fudged its policies towards Syria. To what extent could this tragedy, do you think, be a catalyst now for change, for the world to take a different approach to Syria?
Well, it is time for a change. We've seen in the Arab world, the UAE, Bahrain, now Egypt has stepped forward. Jordan has normalized relations with Damascus and trying to influence the situation in Syria. And I think Saudi Arabia has talked about it's eager to find some modus vivendi with Assad. They want some political concessions from Damascus first. But this is a moment when I think one needs to look at the sanctions regime, which has been extremely tough on Syria, and question whether it's working, because it has failed. It hasn't changed the political architecture in Syria one iota, but it has starved people. It has hurt the most vulnerable, the women and children. Mostly, 90% of Syrians are living under the poverty line. There's almost no electricity. There's no fuel, and the government and the Syrian economy have come to a standstill. And this is not a way to try to revive the future of Syria and Syrian people in this time of great need. So I think it is a time for the international community to revise its policies, which just have not been working.
All right, so Syria desperately, the people of Syria desperately need the sanctions to be lifted. Syria itself wants to be reintegrated into the international community. Now is the time, you're saying, to bring Syria in from the cold. But is the Syrian government to be trusted? Will it try to take advantage of the disaster for its own ends?
Of course it's going to take advantage. You know, everybody is taking advantage of this in one way or the other. And Assad is going to try to take advantage of this in order to normalize relations. That's what, you know, he's reached out to Egypt. Egypt's reached out to him. He's in the process of trying to normalize relations with Turkey. Of course, it's going to be extremely difficult because of the enclave in the north, and Turkey has been the traditional defender of the Arab insurgency and Arab opposition groups. So this is a difficult path ahead, but there really is no alternative. The international community has spent the last 11 years trying to destroy Assad and the Syrian army and bring about political change. It failed. It gave up. We saw the rise of ISIS, the rise of Al-Qaeda in Syria, and it got spooked by the Syrian opposition, and it left Assad in place. And that was a decision made by the international community.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
And therefore, they can't just starve the Syrian people forever.
But the King of Jordan's also reached out to President Assad. I just want a very quick word, Joshua, on the presence of Russia and Iran in Syria and where they fit into all of this. Briefly, we've got about a minute left.
Well, Russia and Iran have been rolling back their aid to Assad, which is one of his major problems. Iran just almost doubled the price of its oil sales to Syria. It's not going to subsidize oil anymore. So it makes it very difficult to help Assad for the West to step in, because, of course, we're fighting this war in Ukraine and our enemies are Russia and Iran. So if we can hurt Syria, many people will say, let's do it, because it'll hurt Russia and it hurt Iran, and it turns Syria into a quagmire for those two countries. And unfortunately, that's the kind of thinking that has prevailed so far, and perhaps it's time that we change that thinking for the Syrians now that we see this suffering.
Gentlemen, there we must end the discussion. Many thanks indeed to all of you, Ahmed Kessa, Assad Al-Achi, and Joshua Landis. And thank you for watching. Don't forget, you can see the programme again at any time just by going to the website at aljazeera.com. For further discussion, join us on our Facebook page. That's at facebook.com/AJ's Inside Story. And, of course, the conversation continues on Twitter. Our handle at AJ Inside Story. From me, Adrian Finnegan, and the whole team here in Doha, thanks for being with us. We'll see you again. Bye for now.